all the activists on behalf of Palestinians, and they have a wonderful website where you can get all the information you need to know about this conflict. It is ongaza.org. And he ends his communique, his email, by saying, do not underestimate your individual power to act. That's all for today of the hour. I'm Sama Ilibiari. Thank you for listening.
De films audacieux qui renouvellent le langage du cinéma.
Pour un accès privilégié aux visions les plus stimulantes et diversifiées du cinéma documentaire, les RIDM sont le festival à ne pas manquer.
Ça se passe du 15 au 26 novembre à Montréal.
Rendez-vous au ridm.ca pour tout savoir sur la programmation.
Les rencontres internationales du documentaire de Montréal. Là où toutes les histoires se rencontrent.
Le matin, mon cadran est assez cahuté. Pendant le déjeuner, j'écoute ses cahutés. En me rendant au travail, j'écoute ses cahutés.
Pourquoi quelques journées veulent tout cahuter?
Au travail, on écoute tous ses cahutés. Pendant que je prépare le souper, c'est ses cahutés. Plus tard, pour relaxer, je syntonise ses cahutés. Et dans mon lit, j'écoute encore ses cahutés.
Ses cahutés! Ses cahutés!
Je capote sur toi.
Tout ça au 90.3 FM à Montréal.
So that was Mariba and her song Writer. I had the amazing opportunity to see her at the Jazz Fest this year in Montreal, Place des Arts. It was absolutely magical. You should go and check her out.
Today we have a very interesting episode. We're going to interview our founder, Robert Bernard. I'm not sure if I pronounced it right, but...
Barnard.
And co-founder.
Yeah, great guy, a lot of wisdom. He's been in the nonprofit sector for close to 30 years now. Mm-hmm. So he's seen a lot and he has interesting stories. And today we'll be talking about our survey because we got a fair amount of responses so far. Interesting conclusions. And yeah, thank you for joining us.
Awesome, thanks, Emil. So, Mariam here, and I am just going to peek at how many survey responses we have for Montreal. Okay, we're just under 60 survey completions in Montreal, and 63 in Calgary, 50 in Toronto, and 36 in Vancouver. Youth have filled out the workforce survey that we are researching right now. Giving us a sample of about 230-something, including the other cities, sorry. Well, we would like that sample size to be a bit higher, mm-hmm. but I feel like we can start to talk about what we know, or what we know that we don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right. We know that we don't know that people are not filling surveys in Montreal.
I know. If you can go to youthfulcities.com and fill out our youth workforce survey called What's Up With Work Lately, just like this radio show, that would be a huge help. Mm-hmm. And long term, we could help influence policy, hopefully, which is the whole goal here. Okay, so let's go. We did a couple of reports on a few days ago on the 206 initial responses. What did we find?
Well, I see here that 60.2% out of those 230 responses are worried, anxious, or on edge because of personal events, and that 52% feel worried and anxious or on edge because of global events. I mean,
yep.
Makes a lot of sense considering what's going on right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. It's well above the, it's a majority for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you guys feel anxious or on edge because of personal events?
Yeah, trying to cover it with having a lot of coffee, so that, you know, you can blame it on the coffee. But
doesn't coffee make you anxious if you have like 50 of them though? I feel like I like go to bed sometimes and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like my heart rate is like.
Yeah. And we do have unlimited coffee into the office, so.
Yeah, that's right. Our offices in Montreal are in La Piscine. That's actually where Robert is visiting us today. So that is in on the edge of Griffintown and in Oldport. Come say hi if you are a youth who wants to fill out the survey but doesn't know how.
You get coffee.
You get coffee. 914 West Notre Dame. Okay, what else did we find, Emil?
Oh, yeah, so 31.6% of our response so far have full-time permanent jobs and 29.1% are full-time students. So it looks like there's a bit of overlap, people working full time while trying to get their education. Mm-hmm. So it's probably going to question how well they do their time management. Maybe we can take lessons from them. And then hopefully they're not too stressed out by these demands and doesn't lead them to burnout. Mm-hmm. But we'll see later on in the survey if they feel feel those sentiments.
It's a good day, diversity too. Full-time workers, full-time students.
Yeah, the sample size is very interesting. I think obviously we want to hear everyone's voice, so we don't have much participation from Montreal's Indigenous youth yet. We don't have any disabled like participants yet, or people who are struggling with a disability, so we really want to hear everyone's voices. And as much as we're trying to quantify what's right and wrong about cities, we're also very interested in values. So we have compiled a couple of categories based on importance. Mm-hmm. And these are the results of, let's see, good jobs, affordability, digital transformation, climate change, EDI, education and skills development, local economic growth, entrepreneurial spirit, mental health, transportation, reconciliation. These are the causes that we want to pull on youth for.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we scoring over here?
Yeah, so it's on a score of 1 to 10, 10 being extremely important and 1 being not important. So the median for the importance of good jobs is 9.2. So clearly if you don't have a good job, apparently you're miserable.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And affordability is just behind with 9.3.
9.3 is great, yeah. It's just that the performance of the cities is what we're also measuring here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see a single instance of the importance to people versus the performance of the city
matching. They don't match.
Yeah. The performance of the city is consistently lower than these needs that youth are expressing needing.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change, 8.6. Performance of the cities, so Montreal, Calgary, Toronto, and Vancouver, 5.8.
Yeah.
EDI, 9 out of 10. Importance, performance of the cities, 6.5.
Yep.
What would you say is the biggest gap? Maybe mental health, actually.
Yeah, mental health has an importance of 8.9 out of 10, and the performance of the cities are at 5.6, which is depressing.
Absolutely. Interestingly enough, I don't think we have a good sample size for the Indigenous People Worldviews Truth and Reconciliation measurement because we haven't polled enough in the Indigenous community, but 8.5 importance and 5.8 importance, 8.5 importance and 5.8 performance.
Yeah.
Pretty low.
That's extremely low.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the questions of the survey was, would you recommend to people to move to your city to work? I put yes. You put no, Charlie. I think Emil.
I think I put yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like overall, only 49% of respondents would recommend to move to this.
Tragic.
I mean, it's the reality of the world that we live in right now. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, later on, it'll be interesting to find out from these respondents, like, which city do they believe they would want to move to?
Yeah, once we have more data, we can go on it on a Montreal-specific basis. Mm-hmm. And I think for the next few episodes, we might even be doing showcases on one city alone. So I'd love to talk to the city teams in Vancouver, Calgary, and Toronto, so Montreal doesn't get all the all the airtime. Yeah, so obviously, the world has changed. Post-pandemic realities, commute times are being discussed very heavily among employers, and that's one of the few things we do know about employers, because right now we're more, our research is more community-based and the people who are working rather than the people who are employing. Research shows 61% of people use public transportation for their daily commute to work. 47% use a personal family car, truck, or van. That doesn't add up. Yeah. But but I think the answer is that some people use a mix of both.
It's, yeah, you can choose multiple answers, right, in your service. That would make sense.
There might be a small minority that uses their bike.
I represent, you know, represent.
You know, we have our fit people in Montreal.
365 biking.
Yes, so I wonder how everyone right now in Montreal is biking with that first snow that has just happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, CKUT, like, is on top of a hill, and I remember the Older Women Live Collective, which I was a tech for when I was working there. They were bikers, and that's like uphill on ice. Wow. With an advanced age. I found that really cool. So, yeah. Okay, what about commute times? How long are they? What do we know about commute times in Montreal and in other cities?
Well, it seems like the commute times, so 37% have a daily commute time of less than 30 minutes.
Great.
And I think that's really good. Mm-hmm. 32% have a daily commute time between 30 and 59 minutes.
Yeah, that actually surprises me. A third of people are like, comparatively, that surprises me, because in our research, we allow you to say 0 minutes if you are working remotely. Mm-hmm. And even with that, dragging it down to zero, we still have a third of people who might commute an hour, which is shocking.
And usually it's not paid.
I think it's never paid.
It's never paid.
I really don't know when we can look at city subsidies for commute time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the public transit is something we still pay to use.
Yeah, I mean, unless like somebody like Elon Musk invents like teleportation, you know? Like, commute time needs to be paid. I'm not having fun in the bus. You know.
Well, it's so shocking to me when you skip. So I don't pay for my transit card, my monthly transit pass as of yet, because I'm biking still, and it saves me a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But when I get on a bus and for some reason the ticket reader is broken, or I'm a quarter short or something, and he doesn't ask me for any money, whoever the bus driver is, doesn't ask me for money. I save $4. That used to be how much a sandwich cost. That's money. Oh, like,
yeah.
It's not neutral. Like,
yeah. No, when I moved here, the bus ticket was $3.25. I do not know what happened.
Oh, yeah. Inflation.
That's true. I do not know what happened.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
And
that
even the student one, you know, because you have the monthly student discount. And when I moved here, it was $49 per month. And
that's like 60-something, yeah.
Is it? I thought it was 54.
Oh, it's 54. I think it's close to 60, though.
Like, this is completely ridiculous. 60, like, again, students most of the time, like, particularly, you know, first years university, they have a minimum wage job. $60, mm-hmm. The minimum wage is, what, $15.40 or something like that? I don't know, like, 15 in 60, there's like 4 times 15 in there. I'm not gonna math, but that's... It's 4 hours of work.
Oh my gosh.
It's 4 hours of work just to go to work. It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I'm hoping we can see more subsidies in that department. We actually spoke about this, so... The city managers, Robert... the city managers and Robert went to a conference in Ottawa, a Destination Canada symposium this week. And at Destination Canada, we had a panel And we actually discussed communication and connectivity and access through the scope of transit. Because people don't know always how to get around town. And our theme was, how are young people hosts in their cities? I remember when I was a first year, nobody used Bixi. Like, no first year used Bixi. Mm-hmm. You needed to be a second year or a third year in university here to figure that out. Mm. And now there's QR codes. You just scan them, you go. Maybe that's a little bit elitist in terms of technology, but I will say that if you make something simple, if you invite people to participate, then they can actually save a buck on mm-hmm. transit. Mm-hmm. So that's one initiative of the city's, these city bikes that I'm really, really supportive of. I think they're still affordable. They're $18 a month in Montreal.
That's good.
Yeah, 20, like, or 20 now, but it's still super reasonable for a mm-hmm. month. And then there's no added fees. I think you can use every bike you use for free for 45 minutes. Oh. Yeah. It's really great.
Clearly, I've been here for 7 years and I still haven't used Bixi.
I'm gonna get you on Bixi. I think I got you on.
Yeah. You did. You were my first Bixi rider.
Yeah. And we're gonna play rider again. Okay, Emil, do you wanna read out some other stats for us? So, what would you like to talk about? Would you like to talk about works, skills, or organizations to work in?
Let's talk about skills.
Okay. Okay. What did our research find so far?
So an interesting thing is we see 39.8% of our respondents have their highest level of education being undergraduate. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, even with the undergraduate degree, they say that the average rating for the preparedness to enter the workforce is 6.
Out of 10.
That's low. That's higher than I thought.
Okay, yeah, I agree. It's higher than I expected. Mm-hmm. But it's still low because you paid for that damn degree.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
And if you're an international student, you paid for that damn degree.
Yes. So the current political climate in mm-hmm. Montreal is very, very delicate.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's even strange considering how, like, Montreal has very good educational institutions, like, you know, McGill's World Class, and even Concordia's John Molson School of Business, and then...
Shout out to UDM, yo.
UDM's great.
UDM with the HSC Polytechnique. Mm-hmm. And then still, even with the good quality education, somehow they only rate themselves a 6 out of 10. It's mm-hmm. strange.
Well, you know, the government, so we're funded by the Employment and Skills Development Fund of Canada. However, there is, federal funding being set aside for apprenticeships. I believe they created like 200,000 apprenticeships across the country, in trade specifically. And we were in Ottawa this week. Do you know how many of those apprenticeships have been filled?
How many?
73.
Oh.
Out of like a six digit number.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So I believe that what we're looking at here in Montreal is many people have varying undergraduate specializations. Mm-hmm. Not many of those translate to guaranteed work. Mm-hmm. That's our whole idea here on urban work, is that you are not guaranteed security.
Nope.
Despite being a student and being in the red financially for 4 to 10 years. I mean, mm-hmm. Charlie, your partner, and our partnerships person, Vivian's partner, are doing PhDs right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is one of the beauties of Canada, is that we are a hyper-educated country. Mm-hmm. But there just seems to be no problem solving to the quick changes of the financial struggles. There's no collaboration between institutions and employers. Mm-hmm. Or if there is, it's a networking event in the business section. It's, it's... Mm-hmm.
But you have to pay your Opus card to get to
Ontario. Yeah.
But I want to touch on the point how you said, like, with the train program, how it's like 200, they have space for 200,000, but like only 73. So it's like, almost makes it feel like the trains are stigmatized in a way.
Yeah.
Like there's less people enrolling in it. When, like,
I think what it is that the young people who are currently, let's say they're 17, they don't want to go into that. They don't want to work in that. And then the people who don't have formal education, because these are apprenticeships, so these are, you would have to have, I think, at least a toe in the water already in order to participate. I'm sure that Montreal is full of broke artists who would love to learn woodworking, electrical work, who could incorporate that creatively, who could learn, who are willing to move across country. I just don't think they're the ones receiving an invitation.
Also, there's this program extend to people that do not have permanent residencies?
No, I don't think so.
Because I think in our sample, we might have a lot of international students, people with no permanent residencies, and that probably would show that number. Because I know myself for a fact, somebody who does not have a permanent residency, there's so many opportunities that I'm missing out on.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't even have a high-yield savings account as a PR.
No, I can't even have a grant for art things that I would like to do, you know? So it's extremely restrictive, and I think...
And you've been here 7 years.
I've been here 7 years, so this should be taken into consideration in the fact that Canada is a country where there's a lot of international students and immigrants, and, you know, give them a chance as well, I guess, in that field.
Absolutely. And then, what did we learn about work patterns? So, I wonder, like, this is the urban work, like, we have quantifiers, and we also have opinions and trends. Have we examined any trends about...
Okay. I got you on this one because I absolutely love this section because the numbers, it's a small sample, it's 230 people in Canada, but the numbers are speaking already, I believe, right? So 67% believe that the hiring process for jobs have become more difficult and time-consuming these days. And I absolutely agree because you go and you do like 3 job interviews and then they're like, we like you, and then they just fucking ghost you. It's like having a toxic relationship from Tinder, you know? It's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
63.6% stated that they do not mind leaving their job after 6 months if a better opportunity presents itself. And you know what? I agree.
It's tricky. Yeah.
But, you know, if somebody gives you a cake that has no flavor... And then you learn that this entire time you were worth a cake
with flavor.
God, I like how we bring food into the discussion.
That has flavor. You know, you give that option to a child, and that's what the child will do. You give that option to anyone that has the option to have a better lifestyle, a better salary, a better anything, they'll go for it. And we shouldn't be guilt-tripped into not doing it because of old expectations from companies to have a whole career and that you owe something to your employer.
Absolutely. And we haven't done any customization of these reports, right? So we don't know if the people who are willing to leave a job after 6 months are in... We don't know necessarily exactly which sectors that corresponds to. I've been taught that, like, 6 months is pretty unattractive on a resume if you have the option to make it longer. And I'm starting to agree with you, Charlie, that that alone shouldn't be enough to keep me miserable, but yeah.
But the reason why 6 months is unattractive is, again, and this is my little, like, anarchist part of me coming out, is because that's what we've been taught, and that's what society expects it to be, right?
But we've been taught
we
to
need
have
to
one,
change, yeah. And, like, youth are going to be changing things, because we're done. We don't want to be working like our parents at the same shitty job for 45 years. And then barely be able to afford your retraite?
Retirement.
What's the point?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Robert was talking at the conference to this young woman who was a nurse, a good salary, you know, in the 70s. And they were never going to buy a home. They were really confident that that home ownership is just not an option for them. And that is something that was always as relevant as ever in Montreal, where, you know, bills are being pitched to legalize lease transfers and things like that. The reason my rent is low is because there's been 2 lease transfers in the past 10 years.
Also, shout out housing cooperatives. We need more of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anything to add, Emil, before we go to music?
I don't know. I think we can play the track now.
Sure.
Time I lose it.
Okay, all right. We are back with our second episode of What's Up With Work Lately. I am joined, as usual, by the rest of the Montreal City team, Charlie.
Hey.
And Emile.
Morning.
And my name is Mariam. I am your former CKUT music librarian. We're here every Monday at 6 p.m. Sorry. We're here every second Monday at 6 p.m. We have a very special guest today. We are joined by Robert Barnard, co-founder of Youthful Cities. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Mira. How are you?
I'm good. So Youthful Cities is doing a co-present with CKUT that we're very excited about. Mm-hmm. What's Up With Work Lately, where we talk about urban work and the city ecosystems.
Nice.
We wanted to invite you on to talk a little bit. Maybe before we get into the DevLabs project, about how you came up with such a cool idea for a social enterprise.
Wow. Well, it goes back 10 years, so we need to have a party, I think. It's coming up literally sometime in November. I have to go back to...
You don't know? Your birthday?
Yeah, it should be as far as the first release. Anyway, so in 2013, 10 years ago, we launched the first ever Youthful Cities Index. So the background of that is we had this... question, which is, what's the best city in the world for young people? And when we defined young people, we were looking at youth who were 15 to 29 years old. And a simple question like, what's the best city for young people, has a lot of complicated answers, as it turns out. So we first of all have to figure out how to define cities. We have to figure out how to define young people, how to think about the issues that they cared about. And we got lucky and back in early 2013 that we got to go to some international conferences and talk directly to young people and say, what do you care about in cities? That basically mapped out our topics that we care about. Thematically, it's, you know, better cities for young people to live in, to work in, and to play in. And for the last 5 years, we've really been focusing on that topic around work, because we think that's when we look at affordability, when we look at jobs, those are the issues that seem to come up as the biggest priorities for young people in Canada. So Youthful Cities. We launched 10 years ago, big global index, and now we're doing all kinds of exciting stuff in Canada.
Mm. Yeah, and the city rankings, I think, get a lot of traffic. I don't know, I think social media just likes stats and rankings and winners. And
top 10 list, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone wants to see if their city becomes the best, or if even if they don't become the best, they want to see if they become the best next year, because people have pride in the place they grew up in. So.
Yeah, so true. And you know, you're right, Emil. Like, when you publish a list, everyone first of all goes to the city they live in and figure out where they ranked. And then secondly, they look at all the cities they want to go to see where they ranked. Mm-hmm. And then they debate endlessly about how it was created. And that's good. Like, we use the indexes as a way to start the conversation, not finish it. Right? It's really a way just to talk about how important young people are in cities today.
Yeah, and in the global indexes, I think that there are so many different values and indicators that we can, like, for example, we were talking in our last episode that I recommend you give a listen. And we were like, Toronto is first. Wait a minute, 30th out of the 30 cities.
Yeah, on affordability, yeah.
On affordability, which is actually, like, maybe I find the most interesting amalgamation of data, because, well, young people are having a tough time at it.
Absolutely.
So if you can afford Toronto, then it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's for sure.
Yeah.
I do like how we presented it, how it's presented on the website, though, because you can just pinpoint what's the most important feature to you.
Absolutely.
You know? Like, for me, affordability is important, so you know I will never move to Toronto, right? And so I really like how detailed it is, and you have different sections, and mm-hmm. I think that's really... really great. It takes everyone in consideration.
Mm-hmm. I think that the affordability is fascinating, and we did the affordability index before the last, before this previous one in 2022, I think it was. And there's so much talk about cost of living, mm-hmm. and we always felt like that was one side of it. So if you could just pay young people a lot more than they could afford, mm-hmm. they could actually afford the cost of living. And so when we did that index, we said, let's look at the income, and then let's look at the costs, and then let's figure out whether there's a deficit or a surplus every month. And it turned out across Canada, it was a deficit in every city, which is alarming to say the least. Mm-hmm. But I think the push is as much to get the incomes up as it is to find ways of saving money. So Toronto actually had the second or third highest income. Ottawa had the highest income than Toronto and Vancouver. So in some ways, those cities understand that it's expensive, and so they're kind of paying people more. They're just not paying people enough to cover that, the difference in costs. Where we got into problems is a city like Halifax, where they actually had low incomes and high costs, and that was kind of disastrous for them.
Yeah, well, Halifax was first on a per capita basis, I think, which really surprised me, because I don't know, when you go that far east, you wouldn't find that many how do I put this? Like, it's not an urban hub, stereotypically speaking, the way Montreal or Toronto is. But rent in Montreal is still lower than in Halifax.
Yeah, I mean, Montreal, I think in that index, came much closer to the top than the other the other two big cities. And it is, you know, lower cost, especially housing, in comparison to Toronto and Vancouver. But the incomes aren't necessarily as high either. So that's why it didn't hit the top of the list. So that's the challenge for Montreal, is how to, you know, one, I think, keep the cost down, and then obviously move those incomes up.
So, like, the idea would be to live in Montreal and get a job that's a remote job from Toronto and get a Toronto pay living in
Montreal. getting a Toronto job living in, say, Lethbridge, Alberta. That would be your best.
Yeah.
So then you just got to decide if living in Lethbridge is what you want. You know, lots of space there, close to the mountains. It might be a great place to live, but maybe not for everyone. So.
Another interesting component too, because I think in the Toronto, well, part of Ontario, you know, the income tax rate is lower, is it, than in Quebec?
Yeah, it is. And that's something that we measured, was looking at tax rates, and that did put, you know, a lot of the Alberta cities up near the top, because not just because of tax, it's also a cheaper cost of living. So that's one of the things that we looked at, was an indicator was, okay, let's take a look at the tax rate, because that affects young people a lot, especially sales tax actually affects young people a lot, because they're out there spending and hopefully getting out there.
Yeah, let's not start talking about taxes in Quebec, because I'm going to cry.
Just another little shortcut to help with, like, the remote jobs from a different province, because then, like,
I guess
another way to save money.
Robert, do you find it advantageous or disadvantageous to be based out of, Toronto, the most youthful city, a couple of times, or do you find, like, that it's important to gain visibility kind of from the center out? Because I know that you travel extensively among not just the four cities of the project, which are Vancouver, Calgary, Montreal, and Toronto, but also to other cities, like Lethbridge, Alberta, I'm sure you've been.
I have been, yeah.
Yeah. So is there, because we've done international work at Youthful Cities, and now we're kind of on this very Canadian, pan-Canadian project, you can't really be two places at once, can you?
No, but I think the idea of, you know, people often ask me, where's the head office? And I don't want to say the head office is anywhere.
No, it's not, yeah.
Like, it's...
You're here, aren't you?
The idea is that we are creating a network of cities and making those cities much better places for young people. And I happen to live in Toronto, and there's probably an address somewhere that says that that I need to pay taxes from a certain address and those kinds of things. But, you know, as an example, you know, we're registering youthful cities in each of the four cities, so that there are kind of businesses and organizations that can operate in those provinces and those cities. So I think it's really important to have that distributed feeling. I think even this project, as you know, we've even distributed a lot of the this kind of skilled support team across all the cities, as opposed to putting it all in one city. So we've got our head of research and innovation, Sarah, here in Montreal. Yeah. And we've got our, our senior advisor on partnerships and communications in Vancouver. So we really think that's an important part of the model, is to have that distribution of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And as far as the research design goes, would you say Youthful Cities goes about it kind of in a uniform method? Or do you, because right now, as our listeners may have heard, we're trying to get survey participants, and our survey filled out, our urban workforce survey that asks what's up with work lately. Have there been any differences in, I suppose, not necessarily the research question, but the attitude you have towards the research that you design?
I think over the years, what we've learned is that a variety of research methods is the best one, and we wouldn't be the only one who says that. So we don't rely exclusively on one method. Even in the indexes that we've done before, the rankings of cities, we're collecting data that's existing open data from places like Stats Canada or Statistics Quebec. And then we're and then we're creating our ranking. But in order for us to create an accurate ranking, we need to survey young people to get a sense of what's important to them. So in each of those, that's two different methodologies. And then just running all these discussions that we do, interviews that we do, that's a great way to get stories from young people. So it's not just the sort of hard facts. We're adding the stories, we're adding the context, we're adding the way young people feel about their cities as a part of the process. So if you can merge the facts and the stories, that's the best research. That gives you a sense of what's really happening on the ground, and it also gives you the richness to tell better stories.
Exactly. And when did the summits become such a crucial part of the Youthful Cities model?
It's a good question. So I think it's, so when we started, we just did those indexes, and then we also ran surveys in cities. We did, I think at the top, we did about 40 cities around the world in 2015, 2016. And then we decided that just publishing top 10 lists or, top 50 lists and survey results, we just weren't having the impact that we wanted to have. We didn't want to do it just be a publishing company and send and talk about data. We wanted to find ways of applying the data.
That's right.
So we came up with an idea to have a global summit, which we hosted in 2016, and that brought together 50 young people from 50 cities around the world. We got them to look at the data and look at how to make it was broader, kind of live, work, and play. And we used that model to kind of create another summit in 2019, which was really just focused on work. And we did that in Edmonton. We had 40 delegates, 20 from across Canada, 20 from Edmonton. And what we found is that's just a great, that was a great model to get young people together, digging into the research and information that we had, coming up with ideas, and then also just building those national networks as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the other piece for us, and is something that we have done right now, it will be more part of our model as we go forward, is, those summits tend to be sometimes 2, sometimes 3 day summits, so very intense time working on building new ideas. The next step is we have a lab model as well, which sort of stretches out the development a little bit and allows you to spend more time. So once we generate the ideas from the summit, you want to kind of put it into the lab so that you're investing and nurturing and building those ideas so we can launch them in cities.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I find that when I talk to organizations or people who are interested by the survey, and when I mention that, we do have the summits, and then after there are these, the idea is to put in place and help put in place what comes out of the summit, people, their eyes light up.
Well, you know, the old line where you don't want to just have reports sitting on shelves. Like we call ourselves a think and do tank, right? Like we definitely want to do the thinking, but if the thinking for thinking's sake, it doesn't really change anything. So let's get stuff done. And that means we need to it always starts with the data, but take that data, gather people around that data, generate ideas, and then get the best ideas launched.
Because
one thing I really like about the think and do type of model is the action that most people are interested in, but with the think and the data, it's like becomes precise action. So then we're tackling the issues and what the data will show us as the most reliable way to do it.
Yeah, that's a great point, Emil. Like there's a lot of innovation out there that doesn't really have a focus to it. And we believe that if we have good quality data to start, that we can identify the needs more clearly, and therefore the solutions are where the solutions should be. So if you've got an affordability solution, which is about costs in Lethbridge, that's actually not really where the problem is in Lethbridge, right? We want to look at where the problems are, design something specifically. I'll use Halifax again. Halifax needs to increase income. Like they have to do that because the costs are so high and they can't keep paying young people less. In a place like Montreal, you got to, hold those rental rates as low as you can to keep, keep things going.
Mm-hmm. And then also another thing I like, because since we're the different city teams are cooperating together, we're like learning from each city, because like one thing we do know is even though Toronto was the highest overall, they're not necessarily the highest in every individual aspect.
Montreal was number two, by the way, and not very far off Toronto.
Represent.
Which means, and I think of all the index we've done, Toronto came first in one of the indexes, and then this latest one we did was the only other time that Toronto came first, but it's the most recent one. So we have that recency bias where we think, but you know, Montreal's just a nudge underneath. Toronto is a great as the best city for young people to work in, and that's something to keep striving for.
I mean, we definitely hold a grudge because 2 weeks ago in our last episode, we have mentioned Toronto a lot.
We do. I suspect Robert's a big Montreal fan on a personal level, but that's just me. So
my dad was from Montreal, so I've got a very, very, sweet spot in my heart for Montreal, for sure.
Both cities can learn something from Lethbridge and affordability. So, you know, don't sleep on Lethbridge.
Yeah, it might be. I don't think it did quite as well on the work index that we just did. But, I think the nice thing about the way that we look at cities is no city gets zero and no city gets 100, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even Toronto, it came number one in the latest index, but wow, it's got so many things to work on to be better. Mm-hmm. And I think the city that was in 30th place was Yellowknife, mm-hmm. and still had tons of assets, mm-hmm. that even Toronto didn't have. So it's not like there's no hope. The nice thing about the data is you can actually look at Toronto and Yellowknife, mm-hmm. and say, how can Toronto learn from Yellowknife? How can Yellowknife learn from Toronto? Mm-hmm. Like the ideas are almost in the data, mm-hmm. themselves, because it's all the same. It's comparable data, which, mm-hmm. means we're looking at the same questions in every city consistently, which allows us to look for those comparisons, look for the opportunities for advancement for each of those cities.
Absolutely. I guess my last question is about how no-nonsensical the themes of the research that Youthful Cities does. It used to be about, you know, the youthful values, and now it's straight up affordability, work. And I guess, like, what makes Youthful Cities determine how direct those things are? Because sometimes, like when you wrote that article about unaffordable Vancouver and Toronto, that might receive a little bit of backlash, you know, from the very cities that we're trying to help out or that we're trying to innovate.
Yeah, I think when I see the integration between those youthful values and an issue like affordability, mm-hmm. Or work or jobs or anything else. So I like to look at it as the merging of those. So the, mm-hmm. values being obviously curiosity, connectedness, openness, dynamism,
playfulness,
and inventiveness. So all of those still make a great youthful city. That's mm-hmm. what makes a city. Mm-hmm. But the issues that, you know, if you get it right down to even the city budget, they don't have connectedness in the city budget, right?
No.
They should, by the way, but they don't. No. So we look at the topics that are kind of more familiar to people, like affordability and jobs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What we want to do is make sure that we're always thinking about the values as potential solutions, mm-hmm. and ways to think about solutions. But I think that's the way it is. The way the media looks is they look at issues. If we did which I still would love to do, a curiosity index in cities, it'd be really cool, but we'd have to kind of educate people on what we meant about curiosity. When you do affordability, it's like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's easy to quantify. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us almost to 10 exactly. So I will let you, I will say bye to you, Robert. And thank you so much for being on air.
Great being in awesome Montreal.
Can't wait
to come back.
You're always welcome.
And fill out our survey.
Okay, I'm gonna run.
Yes.
I've been having cigarettes for breakfast and anxiety for lunch. I've been having medicine for dinner with an apple, of course. I found that I could drink my own tears, Thank God for the mass production. The self-loathed, they need a snack. I got plenty to share with everyone. I'm gonna die. It feels so good. I'm gonna die. It feels so good. I'm gonna die. I take too much of the wrong things. Multivitamins, vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin insecurity. They help me feel more energized as I'm looking for a reason to be alive. My doctor said my mental health's fine. It's as high as the sky and the weather's nice. The waiter told me today's specialty, it's smiling through the pain with friends and family. I'm gonna die. I take too much of the wrong things, of the wrong things. I'm gonna die. I'm cooking something fun on the kitchen floor.
Okay, are we ready? I'm Naomi Klein, author of The Shock Doctrine. You're listening to CKUT. Keep listening.
Lors de nos jours les plus éprouvants, de l'aide supplémentaire contribue énormément. Transit Secours Région Montréal aide les familles à quitter leur foyer violent en leur offrant des services de déménagement et d'entreposage gratuits. Nous sommes un organisme propulsé par des bénévoles et avons besoin des mains supplémentaires. Pour faire du bénévolat, en apprendre davantage ou faire un don, consultez la page de Transit Secours Région Montréal, sheltermovers.com/donner-montréal. Vous avez le courage de quitter, nous vous prêtons main forte. Retourner chez soi après une longue journée devrait être sécuritaire et réconfortant. Toutefois, ce n'est pas le cas pour tout le monde. Saviez-vous qu'à Montréal, une sur cinq femmes subit une forme de violence ou une autre d'un partenaire intime? Transit Secours aide les familles à quitter leur foyer violent en leur offrant des services de déménagement et d'entreposage gratuits, du matériel de déménagement, en plus de leur prêter main forte. Nous avons besoin de votre soutien afin de maintenir ce service dans notre ville. Pour faire un don ou pour en connaître davantage, consultez la page de Transit Secours Région Montréal, sheltermovers.com/donner-montréal. Vous avez le courage de quitter, nous vous prêtons main forte.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
All right. Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.